Welcome to The Excellent Fiduciary, a podcast from Roland Criss, where we explore what it takes to meet and exceed the demands of managing a retirement plan in today's complex market. Now, let's begin today's show with an introduction from our Roland Criss host.
Welcome to our podcast. In this episode, we're going to talk with Christy Arthur, who's Director of Fiduciary Solutions at Roland Criss. We've asked her to tell us about the power of an approach that human resources managers are using to eliminate the risk of failure in their ERISA plan operations, specifically the risk that brings on penalties from the IRS and the Department of Labor. Christy, greetings and welcome to today's show.
Thank you so much.
Let's start with some basics. How do ERISA plan operation risks develop?
Well, let me say this. Most employers who sponsor a qualified retirement plan are aware of the requirement that the plan has to have a written plan document. Just having that document, however, is not enough. ERISA plan qualification rules also require that that plan be administered according to the provisions contained in that governing plan document. If the plan's operations don't follow the plan document, then that plan is not in compliance and can be subject to fines and sanctions up to and including plan disqualification.
In our previous podcast, we discussed the effect that an organization's risk management culture has on its regulatory compliance duties. In light of today's topic, to what extent is that a consideration for today's event?
Well, management's attitude toward ERISA risk, whether you want to call it proactive or indecisive, is clearly evident among plan sponsors. And here's what I mean by that. Operational risks tend to be viewed in one of two categories. There are employers that do not rate all operational risks as bad. In other words, as harmful to employees. So especially if an error or if you're departing from the plan's rules and that's actually to the benefit of an employee, that may not be viewed as bad. So let me give you an example of that. A plan document provides that employees are eligible to participate in the plan after 1 year of service. But the employer generously, albeit probably unintentionally, allows newly hired employees to participate immediately upon their employment. The generosity on the part of the employer, while beneficial rather than harmful, I'm sure, to some employees, that is a failure to follow the terms of the plan document and would constitute an operational failure that could create problems for the plan's qualification if you don't correct that properly and timely. Now, the second category of employers are those in the proactive category, those that adopt workflow controls that serve to ensure that their operations, including payroll operations, are always going to be aligned with that plan document.
Well, from what you've said then, it sounds as if some employers lack the means to know when an operational failure occurs. And for those that lack workflow controls, as you've called them, it sounds as though they're left to just hope that their human resources department will keep the company out of trouble. Is that a fair statement?
Indeed. Unfortunately, just hoping that plan operations are working correctly, or actually what we see more frequently is that many of our folks assume that someone else is responsible for ensuring that plan operations are working correctly, and hoping and assuming is, we've seen, it's not enough. In the ERISA risk management world, some of the costliest mistakes made by employers are operational failures, rather than flaws, say, in the structure of the plan or in the plan's investment lineup or even in the supporting document. So this is interesting. According to the IRS, there are five common reasons that employers give to explain why their plans are not operationally compliant. So this is after problems are found. This is the reason they're giving why their plans are out of compliance. So many say, well, there's a lack of internal controls. We really don't have a process in place for monitoring. Another is we really don't have workflow management resources. So we really just don't have the staff to do the level of monitoring that we need to do. Many, like you said, they do not know how to identify and fix errors. Many assume that the required annual financial audit identifies errors that need to be addressed. We see that a lot. And then yet another group assume that the cost that to examine the plan for operational compliance is going to be just too expensive, both from a time and monetary standpoint. So those are five common reasons that we hear that employers give in our study of litigation as to why their plans are not compliant.
Christy, you've identified for us in pretty clear terms how ERISA operational risk emerges. Let's turn our attention to practical ways that employers can neutralize those risks. What's the first thing you would recommend human resources managers do?
I will say this, during the many years that we've served ERISA plan sponsors, we've learned that one of the first and most important steps is to start with a risk assessment, a baseline. How are we doing now and where are our risks? Now, that assessment, for this particular purpose, it has to be tailored to ERISA qualified plans. It needs to make use of a defined framework of internal controls for that specific purpose. And it's got to be an established, or what I mean by established, just a documented, repeatable, sustainable process in order to eliminate the possibility that a key issue is going to get overlooked. Now, we would argue that such an assessment should be repeated annually. Or if there's a significant change, say in demographics, or if the employer is involved in, say, a merger or acquisition, really any material change in corporate or plan dynamics, we would recommend repeating an assessment of this nature. Now, I mentioned this earlier, but I want to make note of it again here. Many employers are surprised to find that their annual financial audit performed by their CPA is not necessarily going to catch all operational issues that might exist. That audit is focused on financial, not necessarily operational issues.
You mentioned just a moment ago the importance of a defined framework of internal controls for catching operational risks. Who does it touch inside an organization when a framework is constructed and installed of that type?
That's such a great question, Ron. A review of plan operations, the level at which we're talking about, with an eye towards maintaining compliance with that plan document. And I'm talking more specifically about the payroll details. Those are what are most often involved in operational error. That kind of a review is going to involve those parties who touch payroll procedures, who do payroll updates, the submission of contribution files. It's also going to involve your record keeper representative. So that person that you, kind of your daily contact with your record keeper. If you don't have a bundled plan, it's also going to include your TPA. If it, as a natural part of the process, you find some issues, you may even need to get legal involved. This really is an all hands on deck review. If you want these internal controls, if you want the assessment to work properly and serve its purpose, and those internal controls that you implement as a result of that assessment to work properly, it really needs to involve all of those parties.
We use the word assessment instead of audit to describe the procedure used for evaluating internal controls. What's the difference between an assessment and an audit?
Oh, good one. Really, audit, we kind of think of that as an kind of an after the fact. It's a review of what's already happened, kind of, you know, a problem happened and we have to fix it. Now, the assessment that we're talking about, yes, it is intended to point out where there are problems, but the intent is to use the assessment results to make changes to the systems and processes so problems are eliminated. Retirement plan annual audits, they may be used in much the similar fashion. You know, here are compliance or process issues that need to be fixed. But again, annual audits don't catch everything. The assessment that we're talking about, actually, the ideal situation would be to implement something like this from the very start, so you don't ever run into that situation. But the assessment really is intended to be a fix. It's intended to find those issues, including those things that annual audit is not going to catch, because the annual audit only looks at a few defined things. It's not going to look at all of those intimate payroll details that tend to cause the most problems.
Organizations that sponsor retirement plans rely on a variety of third-party vendors to perform operational tasks, and they can include a payroll processor, which you've alluded to already, a record keeper, a third-party administrator. And in spite of the presence of operations support vendors on ERISA plans, the U.S. Department of Labor ranks operational failures among its top three reasons that employers get fined. So it seems there must be a common weakness that causes these failures. And if so, what is it?
That is an interesting consideration, isn't it, Ron? Most all plans have a multitude of vendor partners. And most plans, large and small, are still experiencing errors, even with audits. Some statistics that I've heard across the industry, I'm sure you've heard this too, there are folks that say, we would venture to guess that every single plan out there either has or will experience an operational failure in their lifetime. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. So where does the vulnerability lie? In our experience, it is that very vendor arrangement that is the weakness. Clients are not clear about who is responsible for the items that continue to crop up as operational errors. The plans, the clients are trusting that one of their multiple vendors must be responsible for catching this sort of thing. Now, in saying that, I want to say something else, and I think you'll agree with me, Ron. Record keeper systems really have come a long way in implementing checks and balances in an attempt to start catching these issues. So, for example, there are flags if you're trying to submit a contribution for a recent hardship recipient. A lot of times they won't accept that contribution. Many vendors will send you a notice if you haven't loaded your contribution file in 7 days. So they really are trying to fit those things in, but there are just too many variations in plan features and in payroll operations to be able to capture everything. Their systems just can't handle every variation toward perfect compliance. If someone figured out how to do that, they would have a corner on the market, wouldn't they? So clients believe that their vendors are taking care of it, but most operational errors stem from payroll issues, and 9 times out of 10, payroll lies in the wheelhouse of the client.
Well, what happens, Christy, when operational mistakes are found?
Well, everyone knows that mistakes happen. Under ERISA, it's not necessarily about never making a mistake. The trick is to identify and correct mistakes quickly and obviously as cost-effectively as possible. Again, reality indicates it is not a matter of if, but it's a matter of when these things are going to happen. As a result, the IRS has a tremendous amount of information for defined contribution plans available on their website, which provides employers with a list of the most common plan errors. It offers advice on how to fix mistakes. And Ron, you may snicker when I say this. Our clients often giggle when I say this, but contrary to popular opinion, the IRS really is more interested in ensuring that plans are compliant than in catching employers doing something wrong. And if you go out to their website and you see the amount of information that is available out there, they are truly trying to provide as much information as possible in as many mediums as possible to help plan sponsors understand their plan benefit and therefore remain compliant.
As we head toward the balance of our podcast event today, something occurs to me that I think would be helpful for our audience, and that is compliance professionals often use the term operational risk management when the conversation turns to retirement plans. Christy, could you take a moment, tell us what that term refers to?
Absolutely. Now we're getting into the good meat of the conversation. So operational risk management, that's quite a mouthful. That is a cyclical process, which includes the risk assessment, risk decision making, and the implementation of those risk controls that we've been talking about today. The results of this type of process may be the purposeful acceptance of certain risks. So what I mean by that is you may walk through this process. You may get the results of such a risk assessment as we've been talking about today. And you may look at that and say, okay, this, we can live with that. This, we have to mitigate or reduce. And this has got to be eliminated. So it's typically going to be a combination of those. In our experience, the organizations that possess I would say, a more advanced risk culture, so to speak, as it relates to their employee benefit plan, those organizations adhere to a defined operational risk management system. Now, we do see that based on the enforcement statistics published by the Department of Labor, a large number of organizations still don't have that kind of system in place. They do not have a defined process for plan risk management. Now, I would also say that the risk of damage to employers' reputations and the economic impact of those heavy fines are changing corporate attitudes toward ERISA regulatory risk, but that has been a very slow climb. In my opinion, that change starts with a risk assessment. It's your skilled diagnosis so you can ensure the most proper treatment. And the treatment is a defined and repeatable operational risk management system.
Human resources departments and the executives who manage them bear the burden of managing compliant employee benefit plans. And with the attention generated in the media by many lawsuits against organizations for violating their fiduciary duty, what, in your opinion, can be done to help frontline managers and human resources staff?
Boy, they do indeed bear that burden. And there is a definite trend. And as you've mentioned, it reaches to the highest level of enterprise governance. Now, by that, I mean, we are seeing more C-suite and board level individuals using operational risk management as a tool to track strategic at day-to-day business operations. And quite frankly, advances in technology are partly to thank for that. As these types of internal controls procedures that help address these regulatory issues, as these controls are automated and made more fluid, more accessible, and more affordable, we witness firsthand that these controls help organizations rethink their operational risk strategies. Advances in technology that help address regulatory factors are a catalyst for helping organizations rethink those operational risk strategies.
You've made a great point here, Christy. Risk managers have seen technology innovations make compliance with federal regulations more manageable, generally speaking, lower in cost and conducted with more assurance. HIPAA and the Sarbanes-Oxley Act are two programs that come to mind. How does automation of an operational workflow help human resources departments then?
So an automated internal controls framework allows for the ERISA-based program really to be modernized, to be made more effective and more compliant than ever before. Now, the industry will tell you, this has become a habit that we keep hearing this. The industry will tell you the only way to fix it is to outsource everything, get away from it, put it in a multiple employer plan or a MEP, let someone else be the trustee, ditch the fiduciary role, run from it as fast as you can. Now, in saying that, I'm not criticizing MEPs. We serve MEPs with our internal controls procedures. But the industry is, again, almost leaning to these fear tactics when it just takes a little front-end time and then an ongoing process. You don't have to ditch your single employer custom plan or your fiduciary role. You just need a defined process, and maybe you need a little help in doing the work that is required to solve these long-standing industry problems. To be honest, Ron, I guess I'm a little surprised that the industry that hasn't fixed the problem is now asking clients, just give it all to us and we're going to fix the problem. It's obvious that clients have thought that they gave everything to them, and that's not been the case. So we just don't see that as, we know that that is not the solution. The solution is to have a process in place like these internal controls frameworks.
I'd like to come back to something you said earlier when you talked about the IRS and the DOL's continued representation and teaching, if you will, that resource managers in human resources departments remain responsible in spite of what vendors say. You talked earlier about the importance of a risk assessment. Now, how does an assessment help fix the vendor-related problems that you just discussed?
The idea behind the assessment that I've been talking about is to use more quantitative tools to evaluate how that plan is operating. This type of assessment and subsequent audit procedures built into the workflow enables human resource managers to measure their outcomes and ideally, again, to prevent errors from occurring in the first place. Measurable, quantifiable benefits include better, more effective, and more reliable operations, a reduction in losses from damages, threats, illegal activities, prohibited transactions, and exploits, lower cost of compliance overall, and a reduction in future potential damages.
Christy, it occurs to me that before we wrap up today's episode, I think our audience would find it useful if you could give us some direction on where they can go to find more information about upgrading or installing an operational risk management program. Have you got something that you can pass on for them?
Oh, I'd be happy to do so. So Roland Criss has developed guidelines on how to prevent those most common operational failures. And those guidelines are embedded in an internal controls framework like that we've been talking about today. We use that framework to conduct the risk assessment and then to implement risk management safeguards for our clients. So it's the examination, the diagnosis, and the treatment plan. Now, depending upon the results of our assessment, if errors are found that require correction, we will then work with management and support the employer's legal counsel in its interactions with any regulatory agency if it comes to that. Our clients who are implementing these procedures vary widely in size, large and small in terms of both assets and number of participants. Our listeners can find more information about our risk management resources on our website at rolandcriss.com.
Christy, I'd like to add just one item to your direction on resources. Roland Criss offers a demonstration of an operational risk management system, and a demonstration can be scheduled by calling 1-800-440-3457. Well, that brings us to the conclusion of today's episode. Christy, thank you so much for all of the valuable insights you've dispensed. I hope our audience has enjoyed this event on the Excellent Fiduciary podcast channel. To learn more about Roland Criss, visit us at rolandcriss.com/assurance-implementation. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you have a terrific day.